Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello, Kool-Aids. Welcome to Barca Talk. I'm your host, Gabriel Quiroga, here in the Spanish capital. And in today's episode, we'll get ready for Barcelona's Europa League match in the Theater of Dreams tomorrow night, and we'll talk a little Messi. But before we get into all those topics, a quick word from our sponsor, NordVPN. Are you tired of hackers and cybercriminals snooping around your online activities? Do you want to safely access your favorite shows and content from anywhere in the world? Then you need NordVPN. The best VPN on the market. And the good news is that there's an exclusive birthday deal just for you. Buy NordVPN now and win extra subscription time. With NordVPN, you can protect your online activity and keep your private information away from prying eyes. And if you're traveling abroad, don't worry. Connect to a NordVPN server in your home country and safely enjoy content as if you never left. So what are you waiting for? Visit nordvpn.com/Barca. Now to get this special birthday deal. Shield your data from snoops and criminals with NordVPN's state-of-the-art encryption. Safely listen to podcasts, stream shows, or simply browse in complete privacy. Again, visit nordvpn.com/Barca. The link is in the show notes. Get NordVPN now and enjoy a safe and private online experience.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
As we get ready for the match on Thursday night, Troy Cadet joins me as we're going to talk a little bit about the preview for tomorrow night and then talk a little Messi, because obviously there was some Messi news that came out later on today. Troy, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
Yeah, pretty good. Just getting ready. I'm going to Barcelona next weekend, so kind of gearing up for that. And also just getting ready for this match tomorrow night because, you know, last night in our WhatsApp group, we were talking how Real Madrid again comes up with the goods, and that just frustrates me even more, especially since we're in Europa League. But I digress. Let's just get into the match for tomorrow night. We have a couple of topics we want to hit on. And the first thing I want to talk about that I have here in the doc is, you know, is this pressure for Messi? Is this pressure for Xavi in this European night? I know you had talked about it before saying no, but I still think there is immense pressure to come up with something for tomorrow night.
Yeah, I mean, last week I thought there wasn't, but that was before Xavi went and tooled around with his lineup. So we really didn't, you know, we didn't put our best team out there. So now I think that it went from really not having that much pressure because I thought that we would, you know, win that game to now we're going into a very hostile environment. You know, missing players, which we'll talk about. And then, yeah, the pressure has to be on now, because if we lose, then we're going to be like, here we go again, or we haven't changed, or we haven't adapted. We're not ready for the big stage yet. So all these, you know, thoughts and concerns are going to come out. So I got to say that there's a lot of pressure. I've been on Twitter all day long today, and There's a lot of lingo coming out of the Barca squad about being, you know, positive about the game, positive that they can win, positive about having the intensity. Seems to me like maybe their chatter is even a little bit stronger than it was last week. So to me, that just says that there must have been some, you know, some planning, obviously, some discussion, some team talk about the importance of tomorrow. So with that all leads me to say, yeah, the pressure for me is absolutely on now.
Again, it's, you know, obviously we have to take this as a separate tournament from La Liga, because obviously La Liga, we continue to win. We just won on Sunday night against Cadiz, which was, again, another good victory. But when I look at the record, right, it's two losses, right, five draws, and just one win. Okay, this is like, yeah, in European nights from last season, including that. 13 goals mm-hmm. scored, 13 goals conceded. It's not that it's the end of the world if they lose tomorrow, because we have a lot of things stacked up against us, right? And I understand that it's, you know, if you're a betting person, you would have to take the money on Manchester United. Just they're playing at home and with our injuries and so forth. But again, it's the culmination of these European nights that Barcelona continues to fail, both in Champions League and now in Europa League, which is crazy, right? Because now we are struggling to advance through Europa League. I mean, if you think about it, in the grand scheme of things, right, we get knocked out of Champions League. We all thought that maybe we would have not an easier run, but a decent run in Europa League. And here we are already in the knockouts and we're getting knocked out.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think if it was anybody else in the Europa League, we'd probably be much, much more secure. We just happen to run into the hottest team in the Premier League, which we'll go ahead and we'll just say that they've been given the title of hottest team in Europe. But again, that was, for me, for last week, that was more of a reason to come out mano a mano and really just see where you are. You know what I mean? That's what was more important for me. And the team still fought. So I was really proud of the team, like, fighting until the end. Like, we had them at the end. Like, I've rewatched that game like five times now, just to, because a lot of times my timing of original watch is off a little bit. You know, I'm like, oh, because on the last pod, I was like, oh, 20 minutes of the last game, you know, we had them, you know, we were beating them down. It was really more of so like the last 10 minutes, maybe 8 minutes, but we had them on the ropes still, even with a really bad lineup on the defensive side. We still could have won that game. They had more opportunity overall, but we still should have won. Like, we had them at the end. Like, they were gassed and we were like going full speed ahead. So that told me that this team, you know, in the big picture, this team is absolutely improving. Because like I said, you know, I said it in the WhatsApp, I think I said on the pod 2 years ago, 3 years ago, 4 years ago, we would have got shellacked in that game. We would have just purely got shellacked because we didn't play any defense and we didn't have that intensity. And we certainly did not have the fight until the end of a game. If everybody in the world knew, if you can get up on Barcelona, they're not coming back on you, because they don't have the desire and the fortitude and the grit to do it. Well, this team did. I mean, they were just, you know, they had a hand behind their back, or, you know, to start the game based on that lineup. So I really didn't like to see that. So based on that, I'm feeling good about the team. But that next step is fighting against and winning European elite. And that's where Man United is playing right now. They're not great. They're not, I don't even know if anybody's great this year, but they are, they have, like I said it last time, they've won more points than anybody. I think it's coming out of the World Cup since we started to play. And again, I never could find that stat, but they were at the top of the list. We were like second. So they are the hottest team. They're winning. They're winning the Premier League, you know, arguably the number one league in Europe right now, you know, based on a lot of things. And so it's a good team. It's a good test for us. But they're walking into a hornet's nest here tomorrow.
Yeah, and when I think about this, you know, again, I'm just going to give you a little pushback. It's whoever's in front of you, you got to play, right? And I understand, like, yes, the draw just happens that we have Manchester United.
Yeah.
But again, I, you know, especially coming on the heels of what I saw last night with Madrid going to Anfield and putting a paliza last night, I just, I'm just, it confuses me even more, you know? As soon as I think I have some sort of sightline of what to expect from these teams, you know, especially Real Madrid. I was telling my friend last night, we were watching the match, and I said, yeah, I think it's going to be a pretty tough match. And then obviously Liverpool goes up 2, and then all of a sudden you see the reverse of that coming with 5 unanswered. And then when I think about Barcelona's issues in European nights, especially since 2015, as we've documented so many times. And then on top of that, they're about to get knocked out of Europa League. Now, obviously, I'm going to be positive and think that they're going to try to win. I said, never give up. But at the same time, like when we deal with these cards, you know, what we're going to talk about in the next topic is the midfield. But I can't, it's just really hard to shake this feeling of pressure for Xavi, especially going forward. And I know, you know, he wins La Liga, that's going to erase a lot of that doubt and keep that, you know, but obviously, like, if we want to measure ourselves against European elite, we have to figure these things out, because based on the draw, you're never guaranteed an easy path. And this is pro sports, and you have to grit it out. And
absolutely.
One of the main reasons I want to talk about is that worries me tomorrow is just our midfield. You know, we are, you know, from what I've read and seen today, that Sergio Busquets is coming back. And that worries me so much, Troy, because it's not even Sergio Busquets playing on 6 games in a row. It's Sergio Busquets who hasn't played at all. And to drop him tomorrow in Manchester against this midfield, that scares me. And then the other thing, too, in the past, when we had to make a substitution here of injury or whatever, using Sergio Roberto in the midfield, we always had Messi to cover a lot of those things up. But now you're telling me, Troy, that we're going to depend a victory on Busquets and Sergio Roberto tomorrow. I just can't see it. It's just not in the, I just not seeing it.
That's difficult to swallow. It really is, because the reason why Busquets has had, you know, a pretty decent season, right? He's been playing pretty well. The reason is because who is around him? Gavi, Pedri, Frankie. Without them, he's really highlighted of how old he's getting, how slow he is. And so the spotlight has been off of him because of those guys. And, of course, everybody knows that's listening that we will not have Gavi and we will not have Pedri for this match. So that leaves Busquets, Frankie, and Sergio Roberto as our midfield lineup. So that's the scariest part of them all. And then again, we haven't even talked about the back four and who we're going to put there. But yes, we have not seen any success when you put some of these aging players together on the field at the same time. That this, when, let's be honest, it's when we've been chewed up and spit out in European competition, the Liverpool, you know, the Roma, the all of them. That's where they attacked. They attacked that midfield. They attacked on the counterattack. You know, Busquets has a really bad habit more often or not lately than early in his career, but he will make some really bad passes, you know, towards midfield, even in our side a little bit, going into their side, and the teams that we are playing against just attack with a counterattack, you know, ferocious counterattack, and that's when we've always gotten in trouble. So you have to imagine that that's what Ten Hag is planning for tomorrow, that he's going to see Busquets on the field and Roberto, and that's where the attack is going to take place. That's where the attack is going to start from them. I envision a really high press on those two players the whole entire game, and all, I guarantee, in 90% of counters will start from the press on those two. So how do we avoid that? That's our big, that's when I was, you know, planning for this pod, thinking about what Barca's going to do. I'm already nervous. Like, I'm already, my stomach's already feeling the butterflies already. And we still got a full, you know, we'll be playing by this, and we're under 24 hours, but I'm already nervous. But I started thinking about this, you know, coming out of the weekend. But yeah, how are we going to,
it's daunting. It's daunting because the thing is, I'm already envisioning Busquets and Roberto chasing so many balls tomorrow on the back foot, you know? And it's going to go to our next topic, because I think the only way to really protect those two is having the strongest four. And that four for me is Balde, Araujo, Christensen and Koundé, right? If there's any variation into that, and if Xavi puts Alba and Alonso, it's game over. It is complete game over because there's no speed anywhere. And the amount of long balls that are going to be chucked up, and you're just going to continue to see, it's like, it's almost like a cornerback drill backpedaling, right? It's you're going to just see Roberto and Busquets. And also the other thing, Busquets, I'm nervous he's not even going to make the 90 minutes, you know, because coming from injury, obviously he's been rehabbing and doing, but dropping him in this type of match where it's a sold out match, big time heavyweights, Manchester is going to chase it. And man, I'm really nervous about tomorrow's midfield, just the amount of attacks that Man U is going to be able to garner, especially if we don't see the strongest back four.
Yeah, that has to be – okay, so I'm hearing the rumors, and it just actually popped on Twitter just a little bit ago, Alba's playing, but not as a left back, not as a fullback. He's not – it's definitely going to be Balde, Araujo, Christensen, and Koundé as the back four. I don't know outside of – I'm pretty secure Christensen will be the center back. I don't know who's going to be playing the right back and the center back on the right-hand side yet. That's – we'll see. I don't know. Well, I mean, Xavi couldn't even readjust from his adjustment that he made from the game last week. I mean, Man U saw that they put Araujo on the right back, so they said, we're not going to go up our normal left. We'll just go right smack down the middle, and that's exactly what they did. So that was one of those head shakers to me, like, okay, if you realize that they just adjusted off of your adjustment, then adjust back. Like, let's get Araujo back in the middle, you know, like, put him there. That's where it was pretty crystal clear. They're going right down the smack down the middle. So we'll have to see how that back four is. But I'm hearing Alba's going to be the left winger. It's like it's impossible. It's almost impossible for them to for Xavi to like see past Busquets, Alba, Roberto, Alonso. Like for some reason, he just cannot see past those guys. So we'll see what happens. Going forward here on this Alba thing, I rewatched that game. I've counted him making six bad plays within the first 20 minutes. Bad passes that turned into counterattacks immediately. Like passes that weren't even close to going to another Barca player. Passes that he just passed right to a Man U player and they just jumped on it and went right into a counterattack. We absolutely cannot have that. We cannot be giving them the ball when we have a left back all the way up the field, leaving us with three, and one of them was Marcus Alonso. We talk about numerical superiority with these players, and we're basically killing ourselves. And so we'll see if that comes true or not. I hope to God that it's not.
Four's
got to be those four guys. It absolutely has. I don't care if Alde makes some mistakes. The speed that he brings to the pitch, the ability to take that ball and curve it and bring it around the end, you know, when we're attacking, and his ability to track back to me is by far way more important than anything Alba could bring to the pitch. By far.
Yep, but everyone loves Alba's centering. Everyone always claims, oh, he's back, baby. He's centering that ball one out of six times.
He wasn't centering anything on the last game.
Oh, my God.
He was horrible.
Again, horrible. As I always want to reemphasize, okay, we've been really lucky at Barcelona. Obviously, prime Alba, prime Alves, prime Abidal. These backs that are not only really sound defensively in their prime, but also had attacking ability. And so we automatically think that's what the profile is necessary to succeed at Barcelona, which it is not. It's a nice attitude to have. The thing that Balde is, as you mentioned, the speed, the coverage, all of that, but also the want to play defense. I mean, that goes so much further than Alba. You see Alba make so many just lazy mistakes because he does not want to defend. Like that is not his forte. And so his legs now are much older, so he can't track back. And that's what he used to be able to cover a lot of his deficiencies on defense. And to me, when I look at this now, just thinking about all the different chess pieces, you know, as we talk about what Man U might do with Rashford, to me, this back four that we've mentioned negates anything that Manchester does with Rashford going there. Because if you put Rashford on the left, I'm completely confident with Koundé covering him. If you put him up the middle, completely confident with Christensen and Araujo covering that as well. So I think it really just all depends. If Xavi rolls out that back four, we have a puncher's chance for sure, because that's going to be our best line of defense, right? And then that's going to help. Now, if we go to the midfield, do you think that goes to three midfield and goes with three wingers up top or three attackers on top? Or do you think he goes with maybe four midfielders to help protect, or maybe use some sort of diamond wing with Frankie Dion? What do you think?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. You know, would we even try a double pivot, which we were successful doing that earlier in the year, albeit a different type of opponent. But or even adjusting the back line, not playing so high. Like, there's some little tweaks you can do to like make it so we're not, you know, it's the counterattacks are not so dangerous, right? As long, and we'll have the speed on the pitch again with that, going with the idea that that's our back four. It's much more solid than we had last game. And you're right, they'll just move Rashford around, and that's okay. We got our best four on the field. We got to learn how to deal with it. So I don't know. I will say this. I was on Twitter, you know, again, like I mentioned, I've been on Twitter, and also I just was watching their language, and all of a sudden I just got like, I got a sneaking suspicion they're going to try something in the midfield. I don't know. I've been trying to like think about like, what is it going to be? You're really.
Yeah, hold on. Okay. Like, if we do this crazy thing in the midfield, but like, what is that thing? Because it's not like we can just, we don't have like, let's say, I'm just throwing this out. We don't have like a unique play. I mean, are you saying something like a Pablo Torre coming out or something like this? Or like,
no, I don't.
This type of thing. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, because when I'm thinking of this midfield right now, one of the things that's ultimately going to affect as well is Frankie de Jong. Like, he gets neutered with Sergio Roberto on the field and Busquets, essentially. You know, like, of course, like when in the Clásico, like obviously Busquets was in that lineup, and I get that. But Pedri and Gavi are the ones that are doing so much of the tracking, so much of the movement that Busquets can hang back. And again, like, that's the other thing with this midfield. I don't know. I think if I were to try, I would just try to put four, because I think it's better to have the numbers in the midfield and then try to use Lewandowski and whoever else you want in the Rafinha in the top to manage that spaces in between and also not have so many gaps on counters.
So who are you so if you're putting four on the field, who are you? I mean, obviously Busquets. Yeah.
Sergio Roberto, and I would say Frankie de Jong and Frank Kessié. That's who I would do.
Okay.
You know?
So four standard, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
No subs.
Yeah, well, the thing is, I would just try to use Sergio Roberto as like the Gavi role, right? To have him up more up top and to have him flood that left wing that he was doing, because I think that does two things. You take Sergio Roberto out of the defense, essentially, right? Like, he's not the last line of defense. Yeah, but also, like, he can do enough in the attack to be dangerous, you know?
Yeah.
It's like I always say, like, I know French to be dangerous, right? Like, I know enough French to be dangerous. I can order a croissant. I can do this. Yeah. Like, Sergio Roberto is the same way in attack. Like, he can do a couple moves there that was like, oh, okay. And then he'll make a pass and make Manchester United defense think about those things. But again, we're so thin at midfield that
I know
the more conservative thing would probably be just to go three and have a setback, because what's the worst thing? What if Busquets goes in 5 minutes and gets hurt again? Then all of a sudden we have to bring it, right? Like, that's what you said. Jordi Alba midfield.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, those are the, you know.
Oh, he just sits his butt down and we just keep him out. Yeah, I mean, that's the problem. We're so thin there that if they did do that four midfield setup, like, we have nobody to come off the. I mean, yeah, Pablo Torre can come in, but the guy hasn't played. He's not seeing the field. There's no way that he sees.
Yeah, I mean,
the field,
who else is left? Right, we got Kessié. We got there's nobody else really.
Nobody.
Right? I mean, Xavi suits up. He comes in.
Puts on number 16.
Yeah.
So I mean, I don't know. But I was thinking maybe we bring in like somebody like a Ferran, you know, maybe whoever plays the left wing, I don't know, we'll probably have Rafinha on the right. Obviously got Lewandowski up front, maybe an Ansu plays the left wing, and maybe they do bring a Jordi Alba into, maybe he's a far left midfielder. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. I'm telling you, I think they're going to, I have this sneaking suspicion that Xavi's going to do this strange formation. And it'll be something that, even though I'm going against what I said last week, that, you know, Man United wouldn't have the time to do some type of new formation that we've never seen, which they didn't. They just adjusted theirs. I said that last week, but now I'm thinking maybe Barca tries to do something. But I just have this, I'm just telling you, their lingo about being confident in this, I just don't see their players saying that unless they know that they got something up their sleeve. I'm going to go. You're shaking your head. No, I'm going on paper right now. I'm going on record. They're going to do something funky. I don't know exactly what it is. Let's just make it simple so people can say, you don't know what the hell you're talking about. They're going to put a player out of position. And I think it's going to be in the midfield that normally doesn't play there. And they're going to be, I don't know. They're just going to be, we'll just say there'll be someone that is really responsible for driving the ball forward. So it might be, just be that we have somebody stay back and Frankie, you know, is really given the green light to move the ball forward and do his thing where he plays the best. I don't know. We'll see. Maybe it's Alba. How scary is this? Maybe it's Alba. Maybe it's like a 4-3-1-2. Maybe it's Alba. Maybe it's Busquets and Roberto as like a back three.
This is the thing.
In the middle with Lewandowski and Rafinha. I don't know. Gut tells me something's going to be crazy on the field. We'll see.
I mean, unfortunately, you can't do it because this isn't FIFA where we can just like go through and in one day just switch the formation and expect results like we do in FIFA when you're playing FIFA. But
yeah.
This team right now is so thin, and that's what, you know, it's like one of those things is like Gavi has to learn from this so much because his absence just throws the whole team in turmoil. Obviously we couldn't predict the Pedri injury and obviously the Busquets absence as well, but you can just see from his behavior, the way he got those yellow cards are just so minute of the, you know, you got to control yourself because if he's in this match, it's a whole different dynamic, right? It's a whole different dynamic, right? And the other thing too, we're gonna move on to the next line. But you know, as much as we want to conjecture what could be, what can be with the midfield, I think ultimately he goes three just because, as we talked about, we're so thin, we need to have a reserve on the bench.
Yeah.
But let's talk about the front three because with Ferran Torres having this amazing breakout on Sunday. Oh my God. He spoke to a sports psychologist who may have a lot. It's one match. Okay.
I mean, come on.
And it's Cadiz.
Yeah.
And okay. I'm like I said on the pod on Monday, you give him his flowers for the performance. It was a great performance for what it was. But the thing is, we've been talking about, it's about consistency at this level. And more importantly, you still have to score goals. Now, obviously I still have trust in Lewandowski and Rafinha up there, but do you think maybe he goes with Torres on the left?
He could. I mean, we see that he's...
That already hurts my heart. I'd rather just see Ansu, and I know he's not, because he's going to say, Ferran had an amazing game on Sunday, and so he's going to use Torres on the left, and it's just, oh my God, I'm already...
Yeah, he could. He's not that good over there. He's certainly not that good over there.
Because that's not his natural position, you know? I always think about it this way, right? It's so easy to say, okay, just put a winger on the left-hand side, right? And I know from my experience, I'm left-footed. So I always want to play on the right wing because I can always use my cutaway move with the left. It was so much easier. Now, back in the day when I was left-footed, they would be like, oh, you're going to play the left side because you're left-footed, right? And I'd be like, okay, that's fine. But I remember I could never play fast and free with the 1v1s because I just never felt in that way. Whereas I'm on the right side, felt much more easier. I can play through the middle, that type of thing.
Yep.
When you put Torres on there on the left hand, we've seen him be neutered. And that's why, you know, when you look on paper of how you're going to manage this team, I just think Ansu is a better fit. And also, he just makes that defense think a little bit more because it's Ansu. And I think Ansu is just a better converter than Torres. And ultimately, we need goals.
Maybe we do a 4-4-2.
I don't see that.
I'm telling you.
I mean, we're hypothesizing all these things. I just ultimately, it goes down to the back four that we have to use that back four, our strongest back four, 4-3-3. I think that's what we're going to do. On top of that, we need, like we said, we have to be conservative with something happens in the midfield. And I think we have more flexibility at top, right? That's where we're a little bit deeper right there, right? With Torres, Ansu, Rafinha, You could put Alcorn up there, and you know, you have a little bit more depth up there. The midfield is where I feel bad for Frankie because so tired from carrying this midfield, you know, tomorrow.
Yeah, but they have to, if they can, whoever's in the midfield, if they can cut down, like they made a ton of bad passes the last game, again, igniting the counterattacks. So if they can just be secure with the ball, and then you already have a better back four, I think our defensive, you know, our defensive play will be much better than even, I mean, it wasn't technically all that bad the last game, although they did have, you know, they did have quite a few counters, and they, if they were better shooters, then, you know, they would have scored more, obviously. So I think if they can just be secure, you know, do our thing where, you know, we have that ball control, and then just hopefully whoever's in the front three, you know, they're like kamikazes and just, you know, going for it. Like, we don't need to see a bunch of fancy dribble, you know, just how we always yell in the WhatsApp group, like, just take the shot. Like, yeah, you get the ball, make a move and just get in and take the shot. And the other thing is I would really want to see those guys continuously attacking the net, like, meaning if they do start shooting like that, the whoever's not shooting needs to be ready for, you know, for some rebounds in there, for some quick, you know, trash goals. Because we really, that's one of the things that we don't do that often. And I think that, you know, we need to be able to do that, especially in a game like this, because Man U's back four is, yeah, they're getting Martinez back, but they're still not great. They're still not great at all. I mean, the game that they played this past weekend, that I think it was Everton that they were playing. But they were pushing them that first 35 minutes of the game. I mean, and even late in the second half, they were like a scoring threat. They didn't score, because, you know, they just don't have the quality to do so, but they were attacking, Man United, you know, pretty heavily. So that back four, their back four can be beat.
It can, but the other thing too, is we need to get the ball up there.
That's right.
And I know this is going to be tricky because normally we'll be able to get such an advantage on possession, and I just don't see that happening so much tomorrow just because of the midfield we have tomorrow. Now, again, after all this talk, thinking about the different scenarios, my main goal is I just don't want to Paliza. I don't want to lose like 4-0 and just have our heads down. I want to see us fight, and I hope they do. A lot is stacked against them. They can easily fall down after the first goal, and I'm just really hoping that they don't. And they just keep fighting. It's going to be really difficult. I mean, I can think of personally so many times where you go into a match already thinking you're one arm behind your back, you know, fighting. And it's really difficult to be that mentally strong, especially if you're not have played together as a core, right? And that's the other thing is that we just expect these players to plug and play when they haven't really played with each other all that much. I mean, you think about this mixture of coming in, right? With the back line being super young, being this first year that they're coming together, coordinated with Sergio Roberto and Busquets, coordinated with another top line of Lewandowski that haven't really. So, you know, like I said, on FIFA, it looks great. We play around with the formations and the chemistry, but we all know if you've ever played, if I think you're going to go left on a movement and you go right and I lose the ball, like those are the things that you build over time of chemistry. And I'm just really worried tomorrow. I'm looking forward to the match in a way that it's almost going to be like a car crash, or we'll see what's going to happen.
Or a surprise.
Yeah. I mean, this is the thing, right? I think it would be more dire straits about the situation if we weren't doing so well in La Liga.
Yeah.
And I think that is ultimately what we can back up, and also Copa del Rey as well. And that, you know, ultimately we stack up really well against Real Madrid for whatever reason with this team this season. We are their kryptonite of we can handle them and we've beat them, and Xavi has the magic formula against them. But with other European elite teams, we just can't figure that out.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens tomorrow night. All right. So last topic we want to get into was the news came out today that Messi is visiting Barcelona. I also heard on some of the streamers today that Messi has three options basically on the table, because it doesn't look like he's going to extend at PSG, though I think he should, just from a footballer perspective. I think he's a good fit there. He's still going to be competing at a high level for a team that's going to qualify for Champions. So his three options are basically MLS, going back to Argentina and then coming back to Barcelona. Now, I put a poll in the WhatsApp group. It was like 90% no. I'm in that bench too. Yeah. I just think it's too difficult right now, especially with this young core, to bring back Messi and to keep this drive of youngsters going. And so that's my main thing. Now, do I want Barcelona to ultimately bring Messi back to do a really proper send-off, because the send-off we gave him was hot garbage, as we do with all of our greats at Barcelona, it seems like. So I ask you point blank, do you want him back?
I've been very vocal about that. I thought that Barca should have let him go like earlier on because of a lot of things I certainly won't go into, but just where the team was and what I claim was a lack of leadership. I mean, they allowed the team, you know, he was there. He was the leader. He allowed the team to get soft, and he was getting paid a ton of money, and they just didn't fight for anything anymore. And I put the blame on him because he was the leader of the team. I mean, that, there is no two ways around that. That was his responsibility to make sure that, you know, we were fighting. But then I saw him, you know, in the World Cup. And I thought, oh, man, you know, look at what he's done for that team and look at how that team was just so intense and, you know, played with such joy and just, you know, they had all the momentum in the world. And so I think that I'm still kind of caught up in that moment of them going through that World Cup and what they look like in that, you know, what if he, you know, brought that, to, you know, to Barcelona and just was like that final piece that they needed, and he could help the younger players continue to grow. So that's like part of me. So I'm like caught up in this. I've been like internally debating it. But then the other part of me is like, what if he just comes back and it was the same Messi that he was before? Yeah, granted, greatest player ever probably to play the game. Would he score goals? Absolutely. But he'd also, like you mentioned, he would stifle somebody's growth because he'd have to take a roster position. He'd have to take playing. And so I guess in the big picture, if he would want to be the Messi, he would want to be the leader, he would want to be the focus of a team, then absolutely not. We've moved on past that. We're past that. We are developing a new team. They're coming together. They're playing well. Why would we need to do that? Give them, sign them for a day or do a memorial, you know,
a parade
event or something like that, you know, yeah. Say goodbye to him. You know, maybe he comes back, you know, comes back later. And, you know, as he says, he wants to live in Barcelona for his retirement or whatever. Maybe he's part of the club as an ambassador, whenever that may be. That'd be great. Now, the only other caveat to that is, what if he went somewhere else for a couple of years and then came back like at the very end of his career and was okay with being coming off the bench in like a 70th minute, 65th minute, you know, just to get some playing time and to, you know, be a change maker for us, yeah. You know, deeper in a game. I think I would be okay with that, but I don't see him wanting to be that person yet. So if it stands right now, my answer would be no.
Yeah. So I'm in agreement too. And I think he should stay at PSG because, as we saw on Sunday, he can still score on those free kicks, still bring the goods. And I think, like you said, with that mixture of players that he has on PSG that are kind of young, obviously they've had some really inconsistent performances. But I think, you know, with the Argentina, obviously such a short span of games, right? And this is the thing. We never said that when Messi's last years in Barcelona that he never had moments of brilliance like every third game. It was just in those consistent moments that we needed him to be a leader and more elite in those matches, he came up short. And so a lot of the blame for those exits in Champions Leagues fall on his shoulders, and not only his shoulders, but Luis Suarez and Alba and Busquets and Pique, you know, so it's not just Messi, right? But, you know, he is the best player we've ever seen. So he takes the grunt of those blame. So anyway, I just thought it was interesting because that those are basically the options. We'll see what happens. And again, until this financial fair play issue with La Liga, and I think we should get into that topic on Friday or next week about the revenue sharing, because the short-sightedness of these two teams, Barca and Madrid, and also with La Liga agreeing to the revenue sharing, is ultimately hindering the league, not only for its growth, but also the players, because, you know, from La Liga's point of view, they're telling England that they should lower the prices so that they don't make everyone else look bad. Yeah. Essentially, that's the philosophy, as opposed to like, this is, you know, let's work on this revenue sharing and sell La Liga, because we know, I know, you know, I just think La Liga football is a far superior product on the field to watch technically than EPL. Like,
yep.
If I have to see any more EPL fullbacks clear attacks into the stands, I'm going to flip out. Like, that to me is like, and they clap for that. Like,
oh,
I'm,
yeah,
just like,
that.
I'm just like,
great.
It drives me insane. It's like,
yeah.
I always remember as a kid, you know, it was like, you clear the ball. It's like, yeah, punt it, boot it. Yeah. And it's like, no, man, we want to keep possession, you know, like, let's try this anyway. All right. So we'll be watching Bain and Brett tomorrow night, as Barcelona are currently already in Manchester. So Troy, thanks for joining me, and we'll catch up on Friday to see the results of this this match we'll tomorrow see. Night. Yeah. All right. Well, have a good day. We'll talk to you soon.
Yep. You too. Thanks.
Podcast Network. Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.